this is kind of a follow-along question, which has to do with the Torah and the law specifically, and coming to grips with how we today as modern Christians are supposed to be viewing the law. Like what role does the law serve in our Christian faith today, if any? Welcome back to the Rheology Podcast. Rheology is a nonprofit ministry that is centered around rethinking, researching, and rediscovery, a process that dives deep into the depths of an intimate partnership with God through a concept Jesus initiated called ecclesia. We strive to cultivate an environment that is not only safe to question and seek, but also one that is founded on the truths of partnership, words of hope that were uttered from the lips of Jesus himself. So in this podcast, we'll question Christian tradition, we'll investigate God myths, and we'll listen to those who are stirring, questioning, and desperately seeking more of what God is doing in and around us each day.
Hey there, this is Scott with Rheology, and of course, this is the Rheology Podcast. Welcome back, and that guy right over there, that's Brandon.
Hello.
Morning, Brandon.
Morning. Got my coffee.
Do you?
Yep.
What you got?
Just normal.
Just normal.
Normal.
Well, I hate to start an episode off on a negative note here, and I should have wore black. Well, I have black pants on. I have my black Adidas on, so you can always wearing black today because of we had a tragedy in the family a few weeks back, and my favorite mug, and you know this mug. It's my favorite mug for Magic Morning Bakery in beautiful downtown Bedford, Indiana. I was washing dishes and put it on the side, and I went to move it. You know, when you have one of those movements where like you move too strong,
yeah,
and boom, it like I swear in slow motion, I'm watching this thing like tumble down to the tile kitchen floor, knowing exactly in that split second, but though it felt like 4 minutes in my mind, like this is over, this is not good,
it's the end of
so
it. Yikes.
Shattered into pieces, and hopefully my good friend Derek Willoughby in Bedford, Indiana is going to get me a replacement sometime soon.
Still open?
But oh yeah, that's a gold mine over there, dude.
Okay.
It's a gold mine.
I don't get down south much. Southern Indiana.
If you are through Bedford, Indiana, you should stop by. It's an awesome bakery, and it's fairly cheap. So it's not a frou-frou fancy pants and a charge of $15 for a croissant kind of bakery.
Yeah, yeah. And the other problem is I'm on the keto diet now, so they probably don't have much for it's low carb.
No, that whole bread thing.
Bakeries aren't good for low carb.
Maybe they just give you a cheese croissant with not any bread in it. Just made of cheese. That'd be cool. So my friend Jason High had sympathy on me, and he sent me this new IU mug. That's pretty cool. So I'm drinking Slow Motion, which is the counterculture brand. Decaf is the last. I'm out of coffee over here. I got to figure it out. Send coffee. Kicking Horse, if you want to, you know, promote a up and coming podcast, this is the one. This is the one. So I'm drinking a little cafe au lait today out of this IU mug. And
nice. Hoping the Hoosiers fix their problems this season.
Well, I know how they fix their problems. It's real simple.
Coach.
Get a new coach.
Yeah.
Real easy.
Yeah.
New coach.
We'll see.
I'm ready for it. I'm numb to the Hoosier basketball team this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a sad state of affairs. It's not really super, it's kind of sad. There's a pro and a con. When you're looking forward to football season as an Indiana Hoosier fan,
that's true.
Something's really crazy. This world's crazy.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah, it's too much to ask for good football and good basketball in the same.
Yeah, I guess so.
Same year.
Apparently. We have one team that broke records, 100-year-old records, and then the other team that's just can't seem to do anything. But
yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, watch, and then after the game, wonder why I watched. That's the in the circle of insanity that I'm currently in. So yeah. Anyway. Okay, so this is obviously a little series that we do, Brandon and I do, about talking about God over coffee and all the questions we might have and questions that people like you might have when it comes to like a point in your life where you start stirring about, you know, what does God want with me? And when you start investigating, obviously these kinds of questions come up because there's quite a bit of them. So today we're going to talk about what, Brandon?
We're going to kind of continue a theme we've had going for the last couple of episodes. A couple of episodes ago, we talked about the Old Testament and the stories in the Old Testament and whether they were should be taken as historical fact or not. Then we talked about the Bible generally, how we as Christians are supposed to be using it as a tool, maybe. And then this is kind of a follow-along question, which has to do with the Torah and the law specifically, and coming to grips with how we today as modern Christians are supposed to be viewing the law. Like what role does the law serve in our Christian faith today, if any? That's the question.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think Torah is like this mysterious word, church word, that we hear every once in a while, and not all the time, but every once in a while, and we feel like it probably is important, but since it doesn't get talked about enough, we think that it's not that important, possibly. And also, since it's in the Old Testament, in our minds, all as we've said before, our minds tend to go like, well, it's old, you know, and yeah, we should be focused on the new. And so it was probably important, and it probably has a part to play in the whole story, but probably not that big of a part. And so we'll just kind of move on. So I thought maybe we would spend the first couple minutes here just talking about some Jewish stuff, since, you know, Jesus was a Jew. The whole Bible encompasses Jewish people, Hebrew people, and a big chunk of the Bible, the Old Testament, follows primarily like one lineage of family. It is kind of important, as we talked last time, about like seeing the whole Bible through a different lens than we typically see, you know, in a 21st century American culture, and even a 21st century American Christian culture specifically. And so I thought maybe we would just kind of, you know, at the very least, take the brush and clear off the dust to reveal kind of a little bit what's underneath, and not go like too incredibly deep, because number one, I'm not qualified to do that. And so I don't want to butcher it. But number two, it's probably, you know, for someone to go and investigate on their own if they so choose. So the Torah, the word Torah, pretty much points to one word, and it points to the word law. And so that makes sense when we read the New Testament and we see the word law all the time. Specifically when Jesus, and this is in the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus is quite often like confronted with the experts of the law, right? The experts in the law, these religious leaders that kind of pop up like all over. I used to think a friend of mine used to joke all the time, like those dudes were around the corner everywhere Jesus went, yeah, you know, because Jesus could say out. Like, yeah, they just pop out from around the corner. Hey, what about the, and so you're like, well, what were they doing there? But it's probably very important to note that these guys probably wanted to keep their eyes on this dude because they didn't really trust him. Something was going on, but they just couldn't figure out what. And so every time we see the word law in the New Testament, it is pointing back to the Torah. And so the Torah is the first five books in the Bible that we know of. In the Greek, it's called Pentateuch, which literally means five books. Very creative. Sounds like a much more creative word than actually what it really is. So we talked last time about, if you remember, we were talking about like the Bibles, how the Christian Bible was set up at a certain point in time facilitated by the Roman Empire through Constantine, actually.
Yeah.
This council came together, right, of all these bishops, hundreds of bishops from all over, and they said, we need to figure out, you know, we're gonna create the canon, right? It's because everybody's got these crazy ideas out here. And we need to create an official canon to kind of like, you know, nix all of the, you know, bad doctrine, the bad, you know, theology and the false teachings and stuff like that. And so they did that. So the Christians, we have a Bible. We have 66 books, and some of them, majority of them are in the Old Testament. The rest of them are in the New Testament. And then there's order to it. There's how we've put them in order: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and so on. And so the Jews, though, their Bible is different. Mainly it's different because there's no New Testament. They don't believe that Jesus was the chosen one, the Messiah. And so therefore they only have the Old Testament, but to them, it's just the Bible. It's their Bible.
It's the Bible. So Jesus knew.
It's the Bible Jesus knew. Absolutely. And we talked about that last time too. Like, we talked about how, like, when anyone in the New Testament would talk about the scriptures, they are primarily referring back to the, what we would call the Old Testament or the First Testament, the Jewish Bible. So the Jewish Bible is actually broken down, and I said this last time too, into three different categories, three different parts. The Torah is the first one. That's the first five books of the Bible. And those would be called the writings of Moses. Moses is believed to have been the one who facilitated the writing of these five books. Then the Nevi'im is the second category, which is primarily the prophets. And then the Ketuvim is the third section, which they call the writings. And so those are the main sections. And the first five books, the Torah, is exactly like our Bible, our Old Testament. But the other two sections are laid out a little differently. And so so this is primarily the scriptures. But when you see Jesus a religious political leader guy in the New Testament talk about the law, they're primarily talking about the Torah, the first five books. So, but that's not all. But wait, there's more. There's also what was called the oral law. So the Torah would be considered the written law, things that were actually written down. And then there's what's called the oral law, which was primarily taught to Moses. And because remember how we said, like, last time, there are some things that you see written in the scripture, and those are the things that they knew happened, and they wrote those things down. Yeah. But there had to have been like tons of other things like in between, right? Filler pieces. And so context would be a big deal. And so the oral law gave the written law like context and exposition, right? It expounded on what the written law was about. And so eventually this was, again, oral tradition, right? Oral law. And it's just passed down from generation to generation to generation verbally. But eventually, officially in the second century, the Mishnah is actually written down. And this is the oral law. The oral law then is written down, and it's called the Mishnah. The word Mishnah means repeated study. And then eventually the Gemara, which is a word that means completion. The Gemara was basically a commentary on the Mishnah. Okay, so again, we have the law, the first five books of the Bible. Then we have the oral law, which was then written down and called the Mishnah. And then we have a commentary basically on the Mishnah, explaining the Mishnah. The Mishnah explains the law. And so those two things, the Mishnah and the Gemara, they combine to make up the Talmud. And we've probably heard the word Talmud. And the Talmud then which means studying and learning. There's a theme here, right? Mm-hmm. It's really all about going much, much, much deeper into understanding the law. And the reason why they wanted to go so much deeper into the law, because the law for them was incredibly important. And it was a way of life for them, more than just some things written down to revere. It was really like a way of life. Do you remember also last time we talked about the BIBLE, mm-hmm. basic instructions before leaving Earth? That really would have been better conveyed towards the yeah. law than what it would have been like our Christian Bible.
Right.
Specifically the New Testament. Because as we said in the New Testament, it's really not about leaving Earth. And it's not really yeah. about instructions, like an instruction manual. But the law was.
Yeah.
And so
you can see that, you know, if anybody's ever watching Chosen, the TV show, you could see them, the characters in that show, how devoted they were to the law and living it out yep. in a way that it's a completely different mindset, I think, than how we in modern Western society treat our laws. Because, you know, as a lawyer, I'm dealing with laws day in right. and day out. And
yeah.
But even just as non-lawyers, our daily interactions with the laws look nothing like what we see in ancient times, and particularly with Jewish culture. It seems like it's not like the laws are on our mind every minute of the day. And hey, am I being careful here to not run afoul of this particular law? That's not our typical mindset now. So it's just a completely different thing, seems like.
Yeah. I think it's a really great analogy. I never thought of it that way before. But if you think about like tax season, which is right now, mm-hmm. right? Everybody knows that taxes are incredibly important. And if you don't pay your taxes or you don't file a claim, like that's bad news.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
It's almost like, yeah, you're in trouble. It's almost like it's everybody's like worst nightmare.
Yeah.
That doesn't really come true for most people.
Yeah. It's almost guardrails that you're trying not to run afoul of for fear right. of the consequences of that. Whereas when I think of Jews, you know, you mentioned it earlier, it's almost like a reverence for the law, like doing,
yes.
wanting to comply with these laws out of some reverence, which is just completely foreign to us, I think.
Yeah. If you think of, so let's say like you are an attorney, and so your job is to explain things that people either one can't understand mm-hmm. or two, they just don't have the time or care to understand. But these things are important.
Right.
So back to the tax analogy, we all understand that those tax laws are very, very, very important. And we understand the very bare basics, right? Yeah. That like that when we go to a job, we fill out a form, you know, for our taxes. At the end of each year, we get another form, and that form mm-hmm. or multiple forms, and those forms need to go to be included in a tax return. Mm-hmm. And we all know that like April, 16th is mm-hmm. like the due date. If you don't get it in or an extension by then, you know, you're in trouble. But beyond that, everything yeah. else is pretty fuzzy, and right. we need people like attorneys, you know, tax people who know the law
yeah.
to help decipher all of that. And for us to be able to comply,
yeah, I feel like, trouble.
Yes, yes. I feel like that's exactly what the law is. And then what the Talmud mm-hmm. then is after that, because for us, and you know, as I said before, and you know, man, we've talked about this as well. Like I'm guilty. It was only a few short years ago that I too really felt like the Old Testament was old. Yeah. And I think because Jesus came and said, I have come to fulfill the law, in my mind was like, well, the old law has passed away, because things like sacrifices
yeah.
and rituals, right. They're gone.
Yeah.
So then the Old Testament's gone.
Right.
And then I started realizing that, no, you know, as we said before, this is a narrative. And so this is just the beginning. This is like, as they say, this is the First Testament. And then Jesus comes along in the Second Testament. There's a two-part deal here. But we tend to definitely look at it and see that this is old stuff and not really understand how important it is to the whole narrative.
Well, and it doesn't help that that most of it, I mean, not all of it, but most of it is structured as laws. It would be like me popping open the United States Code and just reading through that, you know, just for fun.
Yes.
And, you know, that doesn't happen. Giggles. Even as a lawyer, I don't sit around just reading the law.
No, of course not. Of course not. So that's why you get paid to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not doing it for fun on the weekends. Right.
So that makes it particularly difficult to get through a lot of those sections, obviously.
Yes. And I think, so you make my point, because what comes then after, so everybody knows primarily when you think of the law and the books of Moses, like probably the first thing that comes to mind is the Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. right? And those are like the cornerstone of, those 10 things are the cornerstone of a relationship with God, right? Yeah. And primarily those things get established because Abraham is, you know, gone, mm-hmm. right? Isaac is gone. Jacob mm-hmm. is gone. And even Joseph, you know, is gone. So mm-hmm. the big dog family is kind of gone. And now the Jews have found themselves, you know, enslaved in Egypt. And so, you know, when God brings them out through Moses, using Moses, and they go into wander in the desert for 40 years, I mean, basically God is just allowing a generation to just die off because they don't know God at all.
Yeah, it's they no don't longer know direct interaction face to face.
They don't,
like it had been historically.
Yeah. For hundreds of years, God and the Hebrew people, there really wasn't much going on. And so mm-hmm. their relationship died, and these people did not know God, did not trust God, even though they saw all this stuff, you know, and they walked across dry ground and, you know, yada, 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 ate manna every day, had quail, mm-hmm. you know, for dinner. They still just could not get it. And so God had to start over with a brand new generation. And then that's where we get the Ten Commandments. That's where the Ten Commandments come in. Right. So the Ten Commandments were really, you know, they were to establish those guidelines on, this is how a relationship with me works. If it stopped there, it probably would be, we wouldn't really need attorneys at that point then for the law. But unfortunately, it doesn't. There's a thing called the mitzvah. Mm-hmm. The mitzvah is basically 613 extended laws / commandments to the existing 10.
Yeah.
And, the list, I've seen the list, and it's, again, it's mind numbing, right? It's one of those things you're like going, good grief. No wonder they had to have experts in the law.
Right.
Because they have 613 extensions. Yeah.
And Moses literally becomes like the first judge of these laws. Like
he does.
Interpreting them. Yeah,
he does. And that's before the 613 really get going. So it is literally like going through like a tax code, like a 613 mm-hmm. page tax code, and just wanting to cut your eyes out, you know, on page 3. So we've got all of these. These little amendments that make, and when you, we said that the Ten Commandments were based on guidelines, right? These are things you should and should not be doing. I mean, these are just the basics. Don't kill somebody.
Right.
Duh. Honor your parents. Okay. Love God. Yeah. Don't steal things. Right. these are like just basics, but people started kind of like bargaining with God. Okay. I get that I'm not supposed to kill somebody, but
yeah,
he came into my house.
Right.
What am I supposed to do?
This is how we do modern law too, right?
Absolutely.
There's a particular topic that needs addressed through regulation or whatever. And it starts out broad, and then people inevitably, humans find loopholes in that to exploit. Yep. And so they exploit it. Now we need a more narrow law to address the exploitation of that further along. So you end up with just this, in the U.S., huge body of laws governing every little thing, and it's still, it just gets, it grows year after year after year.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. That's absolutely it. And so this thing becomes less and less like an intimate relationship and more like a, an attorney's nightmare. And so then when you have these experts who do know these laws, then they become like the police almost. Right. And then they start nitpicking. And the problem is like the average person like me and you would not be able to live up to everything. We follow primarily, we would follow the traditions. Mm-hmm. Right. We would do the festivals. We would still do the sacrificing. We'd still go to the temple if we can. You know, we would do all those things because primarily those are really more about culture.
Yeah.
You know, than they really are about law. It's like us not, I mean, can you ever imagine not celebrating Thanksgiving?
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. Could you ever think about never, not going to another 4th of July parade? I mean, no, I mean, you know, so they definitely have no problem with those things, but with the actual laws, they pretty much have to have localized, police to help them. And this is where the rabbis come in. This is where the synagogues, even though the rabbis and synagogues were first set up as really good things, right? They were set up to help teach people, to reteach people their history. But eventually they get to become like the local police station.
Well, and I imagine literacy also plays a role, like how many folks are able to read the laws. Or are these still oral traditions at this point?
Well, let's put it this way. At the it's still oral. A lot of this is oral still at this point, but, you know, let's put it this way. We've talked, Chris and Tyler and I talked about this. By the time Jesus comes around, and we our snapshot is very different, right? Mm-hmm. We have a snapshot of like three major time frames here of Jewish history, right? We have like the Jews wandering around, like carrying with them a tabernacle, right? A tent, mobile tent, and they're going all over everywhere and doing this and whatnot, right? That we have that. Then we have like the glory days and beyond, where there's a kingdom now in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. and there's a king. And then we have kings that are good kings and bad kings, mm-hmm. and then the kingdom splits, and then they all of a sudden they go into, you know, exile. Yeah. And then we have Jesus. So we have three different cultures of Hebrew people. By the time we get to Jesus, the reality is that they are controlled and occupied by the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. And so the Roman Empire is a Greek speaking empire. Yeah. And that influence would absolutely influence, the area that we're talking about where Jesus lived and did his ministry, right? In the Israel area. And so primarily they knew how to probably speak Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Reading and writing certain things probably, but their culture had become more, you know, Hellenized. Greekized, yes, than anything. Yeah. And so that's why the New Testament is written in Greek, because number one, it's not, the New Testament isn't just for the people in and around mm-hmm. Jerusalem. It's for anybody everywhere in the Roman Empire, all throughout the empire, because people can speak this, they know it. So being able to like, at that point, they would just have to trust that a rabbi knew what he was talking about, or a priest mm-hmm. knew what they were talking about. And if a priest came to them and said, "Hey, you're breaking the law," they would just have to trust that they broke. Okay. Yeah. I guess I did. I don't know. But this is where we come into contact then with Jesus. As we kind of mentioned earlier, everywhere Jesus tends to go, there seems to be an expert of the law, you know, mm-hmm. we're just waiting to write him up, you mm-hmm. know, it's Barney Fife with his ticket book. He's just waiting to go give Jesus a ticket. And so, especially in Mark chapter 2, it's like the whole chapter is nothing but that, you know, Jesus does like a miracle, and because he did it on the Sabbath, and he told this guy to pick mm-hmm. up his mat and walk. Wait a minute, you know, there goes the citizen's arrest kind of a deal going off. The sirens go off, and Jesus, mm-hmm. you're in trouble. Or Jesus's, you know, his students, his disciples, like pick grain from a field, you know, on the Sabbath and they eat it. So we have, this is where the problem really comes in, because Jesus then has to correct even the experts into understanding that, wait a minute. First of all, before you get super nitpicky about Sabbath with me, you know, Sabbath was something created for man.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a good thing, but it's not God. Right. It in and of itself is not God. And so Jesus has to kind of set these guys straight. And so, like, when you think of the question that you said earlier, is like, is the Torah relevant today? The basic ideas of what the Torah is and the guidelines of what it does is definitely relevant, because it's just trying to get us to, like, stay in the, you know, don't go out of bounds, to stay in the field of play when it comes to a relationship with God, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
I don't think God ever intended it for it to have, you know, 613 extensions. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden now we're, you know, it's like we're chained to it.
Yeah.
And it's become more of a prison sentence than it has something that's supposed to be freeing.
Yeah.
So
now, with that said,
I look at it that way.
I can sympathize with folks that would have been around with Jesus. You know, we've been living our whole lives one way, as if this law is supposed to govern our daily conduct. And now we've got somebody coming around and saying, you've been looking at this wrong your entire life, not just your entire life, but for generations, people have been doing this incorrectly. I can imagine that would be hard to take for the folks. And obviously it was, but
can you imagine, like, when Jesus did say his famous little phrase of, like, I have come to fulfill the law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is probably one of the turning points, I would guess, one of them.
Yeah. I mean, that's what gets him killed.
Eventually. Yes, exactly. This is one of the turning points where the experts go, you know what, this guy cannot, he can't be from God.
Right.
Because if he is from God, he wouldn't, sacrilege.
Right. He's upending everything we've known about God.
Yeah. To these guys, like the Messiah or the chosen one is, you know, the idea is a king, right? This is supposed to be a king, a coming king. And to them, a king brings a kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, this is David 2.0, even better than David. And so what kind of king, what kind of chosen one comes and, you know, he should uphold the law instead of trumping the law almost, right? And that's kind of what Jesus does. Jesus basically says, when he says that, he's basically saying, like, the law is meant to bring you to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it really is. As we said last time, like N.T. Wright talking about guideposts or signposts, that's really what the law really is.
Yeah.
The law really is just, you know, signs on the boundary that keep pointing in one direction. If we want to go this way, oh no, we need to, okay, our goal's that way. That's really what the law is. And it is the beginning of a relationship with God for a generation of people that did not know him.
Yeah.
So he's just reestablishing things to help these people move in the right direction and move into a simple relationship with him. And unfortunately it turned into bureaucracy more than anything. And so kind of a sad state.
I heard somebody else describe it. You know, the purpose of the law, in addition to that, was to expose to us our inability to stick to the law. In other words, our need for a savior. We're incapable as humans of complying with all of these requirements. And so we need somebody. We need a representative. We need Jesus, who is able to show us how to comply with all the laws and also do it on our behalf. As a sacrifice.
Well, Paul talks about that, and in Romans, Romans is his masterpiece, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Romans is written from an attorney's point of view, kind of. There's so much courtroom talk and that kind of stuff, and he and Paul talks about the idea that the law was meant to do you know, those types of things. It is supposed to point out the idea that we have need, that yeah. we are, that we do have failure, and that failure, you know, drives the need for a relationship with God. That it's almost like the idea that something's missing here.
Yeah.
You know, that there's a partnership. That's the way it's supposed to be. And now yeah. the partnership is broken, and the way that we are living our life is, you know, going in the wrong direction.
Right.
And so failure alone, you know, it helps us go in the right direction.
Yeah. We've talked about this several times, but it's becoming a recurring theme that I'm seeing more and more, which is this, it seems like the whole Bible is, kind of exposing this, but it's our hubris as humans to think that we are capable ourselves of doing these things, whether it be, you know, going back to the garden with Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. Thinking that they're in charge and that they get to decide, what right. fruit to eat and stuff like that. But now the law is further kind of sending that message. Look, yep. you think you're capable of complying with these laws, but it's not you that is in charge of this. So it's just one thing yep. after another.
Yeah, absolutely. It's right on. It is definitely, as we've talked about before, sin is really a hard word to swallow sometimes, because we take that word and we encapsulate it in the idea that we have done something wrong, or we've mm-hmm. sinned against God, and that we've made him mad. Right. Yeah. We continue to do things to make him mad, as we've right. said before. And really, you're right on. That's exactly really what failure really looks more like, is the attempt to do it our way.
Right.
And there's a way that seems right to man. And this is what we're going to do. And so the law, yeah, simply points that out. That's like, no, how's killing gone for you?
Right.
Not very right. well.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's stealing gone for you? Not too great. It's literally a course correction, which shows and reveals that there is that you've been off course, mm-hmm. but there is a right way to go. And so it absolutely does that. And so then when you see Jesus saying, I'm the fulfillment of that, yeah. like the idea is like, this is where the course has been going this whole time.
Yeah.
It's been leading to him. So.
I think the risk, because I could see how some would take, you know, some of Paul's words in Romans, for example, about us not being, you know, beholden to the law anymore now that we have God's grace through Jesus. But it's easy to see the risk of taking that to the other extreme and saying, well, okay, well, that means the law has no bearing on our lives whatsoever. These things are just antiquated and we can ignore them completely. It seems like they still exist for a reason, which is what you're describing, which is as guidepost to show us yeah. God's intended design for how we are to live our lives, even recognizing though that we are always going to miss the mark in some form yeah. or fashion. And that's why we need Jesus to begin with.
Totally. I think there specifically, Paul is probably referring to the 613 extensions mm-hmm. than the actual idea of the law.
Yeah.
I think he's probably really speaking, not probably, he is definitely speaking to a Jewish audience.
Yeah.
And understanding what we just talked about, what the law had really become to them at this point, had really become more of a hindrance
yeah.
than a help. And so Paul is really probably just saying, like, you know, the system
yeah.
of law, right,
yeah.
is what is gone.
Right. You're that missing the forest for the trees. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Because a relationship isn't built with God, isn't built on a system. It's built on love mm-hmm. and relationship. And so to me, that would be, and you know, the funny thing is, dude, is that we can parallel that today.
Yeah.
We still seek out a system.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that would be like the main point of this whole thing, is like, does the Torah, is it relevant? The probably the big point would be that it, you know, once the Torah turns into a system, the, you know, the system is what is a negative. And for yeah. us today in our culture, we do set up systems. We still have a system in play.
Yeah.
That's been around for, you know, centuries now. And so I'd say that's probably where we could really kind of put the flag in the ground is that, you know, once it becomes a system, it obviously is less of a relationship at that point.
Yeah, I mean, this
And
is
that
what
is,
we talk about all the time.
yep.
You
Yeah,
become
it's
beholden to the system rather than what Jesus intended.
right. And when Jesus, and then it really sheds the light on the thing that we talk about all the time, which is the underlying value of reality, which is ecclesia. When Jesus says ecclesia, you know, he's going way beyond the system. You know, he's going into partnership. And I'm still trying to help people understand that God is a holy God. He's different. He's unique. And he wants relationship. He wants
It's
partnership.
kind of like what we talked about in our last episode. It's like we talked about there, you don't want to get to a place where you're worshiping the Bible. Here, it's kind of the same thing. It's
Absolutely.
easy for folks to worship the law in the Jewish culture rather than what the law is standing for.
Totally. Yeah, it's we want a system because it's easier. And it's, you know, and we can see it, it's tangible, and we can go, okay, well, I didn't do, you know, A, B, and C, so I'm good. I'm okay. And instead I did, you know, four, five, and six, and four, five, and six leads to seven. So cool. You know, this is it. It's mechanical and, you know, it's predictable and it requires way less effort. And that's just not really what God had in mind at all.
From the whole Rheology team, we hope these podcasts are encouraging and educational. Rheology exists for three main reasons: to reach, train, and equip those who want to go deeper with God in this partnership called Ecclesia. If God has been stirring in your heart, where you are wondering if there's more than what you've been experiencing in today's 21st century Christianity, we'd love to connect with you, to hear your story and help you know that you are not alone. You can simply contact us via the website, rheologylife.com, or reach out via Instagram at rheology_life. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.